Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and to the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. And by the Tennessee Republican Assembly, a socially, morally, and fiscally conservative group of individuals committed to upholding the traditional Republican ideals that represent the American founders' original intent. We believe in God, family, and country. We believe in principles over politics. The TRA is the only rhino-free Republican organization in Tennessee. Visit our website at tnra.org. That's tnra.org. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for being with us tonight. We'll have some good guests here a little later on. We're going to have Senator Jim Somerville. And if you hadn't heard, Marsha Blackburn has a challenger. And we'll talk to him tonight. His name is Jacob Brim, and he is challenging her for the Republican nomination in the 7th District here in Tennessee. So we're going to have them a little bit later. Appreciate you being with us tonight. You know, Tennessee, we often hear that Tennessee is a red state. And I think there are certainly a lot of people that we have enough people to make up a red state, with the exception of our politicians. That's where we seem to run into problems. I think there we're probably more of a pink state at best. So it's been pretty discouraging, a lot of the things that I've seen go on in Tennessee over the last couple of years. But the Tennessee GOP seems to have sunk to a new low. Let me see if I can pronounce this name. Mawafak Al-Jabari. And I'm sure I'm murdering that name, okay? He also uses the name Mawafak Muhammad. I don't know why he has an alias. He is the president of the Salahuddin Islamic Center. He's a native of Kirkuk, Iraq. He's currently employed as a transportation planner of the Tennessee Department of Transportation. And he is an AMAC board member in Middle Tennessee. Now, AMAC is the American Muslim Advisory Council. And that was an organization set up here a couple years ago in Tennessee. And they have a partnership with our State Department of Homeland Security. I've seen the document. It's got Bill Gibbons' name on it, signed, and Governor Haslam. Now, of course, they deny that this exists, but it does. This partnership exists, and of course, AMAC exists. Matter of fact, from AMAC, you have a lobbyist named Remza Suleiman, and she is the American Center for Outreach Lobbyist, which, you know, she works with AMAC, and the American Center for Outreach is just a spinoff. And basically, she lobbies in Nashville for the Muslims in Tennessee. Of course, you can imagine what kind of fuss the ACLU would raise if you had a Christian doing that. This guy is running for state senate on the Republican ticket in Tennessee. As I understand it, he was recruited by an SEC member to run for the 21st Senate District. And he also, of course, he had to be vouched for. And as I understand, he was vouched for by the GOP county chair of Davidson County. I think the guy's name is Duval, Bob Duval, I believe. So that's where we're at today in Tennessee. The Tennessee establishment has a Republican running. It has an Islamist running on a Republican ticket in Tennessee. And it's just really scary that these people don't get it. And now, before people start throwing out the charge of, they'll use the term for people like me who have concerns about this, they'll call us an Islamophobe or say we're Islamophobic. Well, you know, I'm going to give a response that I heard from somebody who I generally speaking have very little to agree with. There's very few things that Bill Maher says that I agree with. He's pretty far left. I'm pretty far right. But he said this the other day. Islamophobic is a word created by fascists, used by cowards to manipulate morons. And, you know, I think he's absolutely right. And I'm going to say that one more time because it's worth repeating. Islamophobic is a word created by fascists, used by cowards to manipulate morons. And I was reading through about this guy, Arjababi, and like I say, I'm sure I'm murdering his name. And back in 2010 when Ron Ramsey was running for governor, he made some comment about Islam is more of a cult than a religion. I personally don't see a problem with that thought, that that's what it is. Anyway, Arjababi heard that and got all upset, and he basically accused both parties of using Islamophobia to attempt to deny the rights of Muslims in this country. And I'm like, what a crock. First off, you know, let's look at the whole thing. A phobia refers to an irrational fear. Well, I got news for you. If you don't have some concerns about Islam in this country, and in the world, in fact, what planet are you living on? I mean, you look at what's happened in Europe. You look at the whole parts of the cities there in Paris and other places that are no-go zones. And look up here in Dearborn, Michigan. Okay, I mean, there is something to be concerned about. And oh, by the way, they actually have a plan. It's called their explanatory memorandum that the FBI used in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terror financing trial in the history of America. And they used this explanatory memorandum written by the Muslim Brotherhood as evidence in the trial. There were no denials by any of the defendants on what was said in this explanatory memorandum, nothing. And they laid out 27 organizations that are, you know, part of their plan. MSA, Muslim Student Association, obviously CARE. CARE had some indicted and some unindicted co-conspirators in that case. CARE, there was a member from CARE, I can't remember his name, and if I could, I probably couldn't pronounce it, who was there at the first meeting of, I believe it was either AMAC or the American Center for Outreach, which is a spinoff of AMAC, okay? So, matter of fact, there was a member of CARE along with people from this AMAC organization. I don't know if Mr. Arjababi was there or not, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't, at the Murfreesboro Mosque, okay? So you have these known terrorist entities. And now in Tennessee, the Tennessee GOP has stooped to a new low, and they have actually, I'm going to say, gone out and recruited this guy. Because if you remember a few weeks back, that the TRA, Tennessee Republican Assembly, proud to say they were one of the sponsors of this show, they caught flack from the local Muslims, AMAC and others, about some of the people they were going to have at their annual convention. Let's see, trying to remember the guy's name. Escapes me, of course. If I didn't have to think of it, I'd have it right on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, a guy who is known to tell the truth about Islam, and of course they don't like the truth. And so they were trying to, they basically got in touch with the state GOP and asked the state GOP, why are you courting these Islamophobic speakers? And they said, hey, that's the TRA. We have nothing to do with TRA. They're totally separate. And then they went on record. There was a GOP spokesman that said, hey, you know, we're actually trying to reach out to the Muslim community in Tennessee. Well, apparently they have reached out to the Muslim community in Tennessee. And now in Davidson County, in the 21st Senate District in the state of Tennessee, the supposedly red state of Tennessee, the supposedly conservative party in Tennessee has recruited a Muslim, an Islamist, okay, not a cultural Muslim, not somebody who just happened to be born a Muslim and has no clue what it's all about, but a dedicated and devout Muslim to run on the GOP ticket in Tennessee. That ought to make you sick even if you're not a Republican. And I want to address something here. We got a caller on the line, and I'll take it the call here in just a second. But I want to address this a minute. You know, the CARE and other groups like that doing everything they can, and they've been successful. Matter of fact, CARE and the Muslim Brotherhood, which they're working together. CARE is part of the Muslim Brotherhood. But remember, we have the Muslim Brotherhood also advising our president at Homeland Security, at the federal and at the state level, and in 2011 or 2012, they removed any reference to radical Islam from FBI training manuals, military. When you get briefings now on terrorism and military, they don't talk about Islamic terrorism or radical Islam. I mean, they just don't talk about it, which is insane. Absolutely insane. I want you to think a minute about Islam and these people that say, well, you know, they're not all bad. And you're right. I understand that not every Muslim is a physical threat. I understand not every Muslim understands his religion. Some would probably be horrified if they actually read a little more. But there's a few problems here. When you hear about the moderate Muslims, first off, where are they? Okay. Secondly, how can a religion started by a pedophile? Okay, he married a girl who was 6 years old and consummated the marriage at 9. I think that qualifies him as a pedophile any country in any century. He has killed, in the ideology that he spawned, the not just religious but political ideology that he spawned, has killed millions. Estimates as high as 270 million, one figure I've seen. And the adherents of this religion, they view Muhammad as the model Muslim, okay? And he condones things such as murder of Christians, murder of Jews, murder of anybody who doesn't conform. And or they can be, you know, pay the tax and be a second-class citizen, be a dhimmi. They have no rights. They can totally submit and, you know, might let you live. They can rape, they can steal, they can do anything. That's the model Muslim. And they also practice something called taqiyya, which means if it's any interest of advancing Islam, they can lie. So I'm just curious if anybody else has ever heard of a religion started by a pedophile, a murdering, raping, thieving, lying pedophile, that they can somehow qualify as moderate. I mean, how do you do that? How do you spin that? So, I mean, by those standards, are there moderate followers of Charles Manson? I don't think anybody would agree that there are any moderate followers of Charles Manson. How can there be moderate followers of Muhammad? So, anyway, this is how low the Tennessee GOP has sunk. And, I blew by that first read. Let me catch up here real quick, and then I will take the first caller. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Your host, Insight Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And we've got Kurt on the line, and let's get him in here before we have to take a break. Kurt, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Dave, for the most part. How about you?
Okay, appreciate your patience. Had you on hold there a little while.
No,
any
no
comments?
Yeah. In doing our research on Mr. Moffat Jabari, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
I was told that he calls himself Sam. Okay,
really?
A lot of foreigners, you know, choose an American name, you know, for obvious reasons. But I did think about that for a little while. Sam. Okay. Sam. Now I know why he chose Sam. Because an RPG won't work. That don't make an American name.
Okay.
You get it, Sam, RPG.
Yep. Surface air missiles. Gotcha.
But it's, you know, the more I think about it, the more ludicrous it becomes. And you mentioned our friend Jim Hart this afternoon, and I've been thinking about that a lot.
Okay. Before you go any further, let's clarify that he is not our friend.
Okay, I was just going to say, yeah, you're right. For the people out there in the audience that don't know, Jim Hart is a little bit off-center, but I've never heard any accusation of him being affiliated with an organization that blows up buildings in America. I've never heard of him being accused of being affiliated with any organization that burns churches and martyrs Christians, or that kidnaps young girls. I've never heard any of those sorts of accusations about Mr. Hart from anyone.
Yeah.
But yet it was seen fit to not allow his name to be on the Republican ballot. But now it is seen fit for whatever, however you pronounce it. I'm not even going to try again. I had it pulled up where I could read it, and I lost it.
Abishari is how I'm saying it. That's probably not correct, but that's as close as I'll get.
Anyway, they saw fit to allow his name on the ballot. So, you know, I mean, what is wrong with this picture here? Just what is wrong with this picture?
Well, and let me hit this real quick, and we'll probably have to finish some of this after the break, but I want to clarify.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim Hart, if you live in Stewart County, Henry County, I'm not sure where else, you have probably seen Jim Hart. He's, I'm going to guess, late 60s, early 70s, and he's always out no matter what the weather. You know, 9,000 degrees in the summer, everybody's dripping sweat, and he's standing there with a sign on that says equal rights for whites or something to that effect. And I've read some of the things he's wrote, and, you know, some of them start off making sense, and then he dips off into racist evolutionist theory, okay? And he actually he came to one of our events one time in Dover, and this was a campaign, I don't know if it's 2012 or 2010, and wanted to speak, and I said, no, we know who you are, we know what you're about, and you're in the wrong place, buddy. So, now, I don't recall the year, I think it may have been 2008, when he was running for the House, I would have been District 8 at the time, I believe, wanted to run as a Republican, and the GOP basically said, nope, we don't want you in our party. Now, I don't have a problem with him doing that, not at all. But now they are allowing somebody who's affiliated with an ideology that is set on the destruction of this country, and they're embracing this guy. And it just, I'm like, wait a minute, how about, you know, let's be consistent here. You wouldn't allow this guy who that I know of. I mean, he was an idiot. He was a racist. And I understand you don't want him in the party, but he was not advocating the destruction of our country. He was not advocating pedophilia. He was not advocating rape of those that happen to be of another religion as fair game. Yet they booted him out of the party, and they embrace a racist. I mean, a total racist, a anti-Semitic, a just, you name it, the worst of all ideologies. anyway, okay, we've got another caller that just popped up. I think that's Sharon Ford. You know what? We're just going to hold off, and we're going to take our break at the bottom of the hour. Let me go ahead and bring Sharon into the conversation here. Sharon, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Dave?
Good.
I'm glad to see
you
discussing this topic. But I think one of the things that we are missing in this discussion is the fact that the bylaws of the GOP, Section 1A, says that to be on the ballot, you shall be a legally registered voter in the senatorial district from which you are elected. You shall have voted in the last three Republican primaries in your county of residence during those primary elections. I'm looking at this gentleman's voting record, and he has only voted once. So I would like to call upon people to ask Bob Duvall, how can he stand good for him when he is violating his very bylaws that he has sworn to uphold?
Ah, I wasn't aware of that. Well, not only Bob Duvall, but Chris Devaney as well. Or I guess Chris Devaney was taking Bob Duvall's word for it, or what?
I think that Chris was well aware of the whole situation. The thing that to me is more appalling, and then they wound up then throwing some people off the ballot. Matt Collins was removed just because, I mean, he's voted in every Republican primary since he's been here, and because of a personality issue, they chose to remove him.
Wow. Yeah, they've got somebody that's only voted in one primary.
Yep. So it gets murkier and murkier. But I agree with what you were saying earlier, and that is I believe that we can make the allegation that Chris Devaney and his GOP friends have gone out and actively recruited this gentleman to run. I mean, because, as you mentioned, on March the 28th, Heidi Hall had an article about us, and that's when Michael Sullivan said that they have now hired a full-time engagement director to reach out to Muslims and other diverse groups.
But look who they didn't want. I mean, the solid Republicans, the solid conservatives that they didn't want. So basically the establishment GOP that brings us the likes of Lamar Alexander, Bob Corker, Bill Haslam, and Chris Devaney for that matter, and wants to have Chris Christie come and speak at their annual event. There's room for that. There's room for far-left liberals and people like Christie. And apparently there's room for Muhammad in the Tennessee establishment GOP, but there's no room for real conservatives that ever made the mistake of criticizing leadership. Does that sum it up?
That would be my deduction. Their big tent extends to everyone except people like you and me.
Yeah.
And
so
I think
what can we...
Brent Leatherwood said today, and I may have missed this, you may have already covered it, but he stated today that Bob Duvall was responsible for this person being on the ballot. There's also another person on the ballot that has not met the criteria of their bylaws. And we'll probably talk about that in the forthcoming weeks. But I just wonder, does Bob Duvall know that the state GOP is laying this at his feet?
So what's the recourse? What recourse does the party have?
I don't know, because we saw so much shenanigans going on in Sumner County and also in Murray County. And unless all of the leaders of all the different liberty-minded groups get together and join together, I don't know that we're ever going to be able to do anything, because right now, Chris Devaney, through changing the bylaws in the December meeting of last year, basically has set himself up to be the arbiter of all things Republican throughout the entire state of Tennessee. And that's why the SEC is important. That's why people need to get more involved and understand what's going on. The TRA started 3 years ago with a project to try to get the majority of the SEC members in, and while many people that ran this time may not be a direct result of that, but a lot of people became aware because we went to a lot of groups and talked about it, and we may still wind up getting the majority in, and that would give us the power to be able to do something about this absurdity that's going on that's passing for state leadership.
And the fact that they would endorse somebody like that, they would want this, and, especially in light of who they have done everything they can to keep out of the SEC. It just galls me, and like I say, it should make anybody in Tennessee, anybody in the country, should be disgusted with this. And I guess the best we can do is make sure everybody knows. Obviously, we can get the word to Mr. Duvall pretty quick and Chris Devaney, and basically the Tennessee GOP owns this. They own this affiliation with an Islamist, and they've made it clear they'd rather have an Islamist in the Tennessee GOP than a conservative constitutionalist.
Yep. Well, I think the question that I would have for this gentleman, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce his name, but that is, if he is elected, he has to place his hand on God's Holy Bible. Is he going to do like the person from, is it Michigan or Minnesota, that used the Quran? I mean, so are we going to start saying that no longer is the Bible the basis for our Judeo-Christian country? And who is he going to have his allegiance to? Is it going to be God's law, or is it going to be Sharia, or is it going to be man-made law, or is it going to be the Constitution? I think he needs to be asked those questions, because I think they're valid questions.
Yeah, but his religion doesn't recognize anything but Allah's law. It doesn't recognize man-made law. It doesn't recognize the Constitution. So, I mean, just by even swearing him in, even if he were to swear in on the Bible, it would be a lie.
It would be your taqiyya.
Yeah, your taqiyya, exactly, which, they can do if it furthers their cause. But, people need to add, and here's the only silver lining I see to this is that this is an opportunity for like-minded people to get the word out, and there's going to be people at these events, because it's an election year, that might not otherwise come into some of the briefings that me and you have been to and some of the things that we've heard and read and know. They're going to be exposed to this, because basically the elites have thrown down the gauntlet. They said, hey, we're backing Muhammad here, so to speak, and we're going to hold them to that and say, okay, is this what you're supporting? We're going to lay it out.
Perhaps we need to all start tomorrow calling the GOP headquarters and ask Chris Devaney to explain how it is that he would take a follower of Islam over a God-fearing Christian. I think he needs to be asked that question repeatedly.
Yep.
And we need to hang
this
around Chris's neck. That's hyperbole, so nobody thinks I'm threatening Chris.
Well, thanks for taking
my call, Dave. I was just sitting here looking up this person's voting record, and it just made me even angrier to see that he's only voted one time, and that Bob Duvall and Chris Devaney and Brent Leatherwood and all of them would give him a pass and throw Matt Collins off the ballot.
Yeah, and there was other people
James,
that they tried to
James Gann, yeah, James Gann in Rutherford County, an amazing young man that is so committed to trying to make a difference, and he had only voted twice, but his understanding was by the time the August election came around, he would have voted the third time because of the May primary, but they wouldn't have any of it, so they kicked him off because he'd only voted twice, but this person's only voted once, and they allowed him on. So you're right. We need to all band together, and we need to demand some answers on this.
Yeah. Well, they own this one, that's for sure.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Sharon, for calling in, and
right.
Look forward to having you back.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dave. Bye.
Take care. Just when you think you've heard everything, those leftists in D.C. pull something else. Now, the leftists in Nashville tend to do this, too, if you hadn't noticed. They're going to keep on doing it until we, the people, run them out of town on a rail. But what about in the meantime? What are you going to do to protect your family, your property, and your sacred rights as an American when the left-wingers try to redistribute food or who knows what else in the name of social justice? Don't wait for the left to turn our world upside down. Get ready now. Make sure you can provide for your family in an emergency by going to the Patriot Depot, America's best-known warehouse for all your patriotic gear and survival needs. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. You'll find everything from emergency food supplies to the patriotic gear you'll need today and in the future. That's Patriot Depot at conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this short break. You listen to Inside
Americans
Tennessee.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Okay. Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No. Not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Before the break, we were talking about the latest Tennessee GOP, or establishment GOP move here in Tennessee. They've reached out to the Muslims, and now we have an Islamist running in the state of Tennessee in the 21st Senate District. And if you didn't hear a few minutes ago, Sharon Ford from the TRA called in, and it turns out that the requirement to be vetted, you know, to run as a candidate in the GOP is that you have to have voted in the last three Republican primaries. But this guy, Muwafiq Ibajadi, whatever the guy's name is, had only voted in one, yet he was allowed. He was referred by an SEC member, and I cannot recall that lady's name. We'll find that out. Don't worry. That will be out in the news here before long. And that Bob Duvall vetted this guy. And Bob Duvall apparently told Chris Devaney, yeah, he's good to go, when there were a lot of people who had voted in every Republican primary since they've been eligible. And you know, are conservatives, constitutionalists, and they were disqualified because in the past, you know, they'd spoken out too much against the establishment, or that, or personality conflicts, whatever. But apparently, you know, Chris Devaney just does what he wants. Rules don't matter. And so now Tennessee GOP establishment's reached out to an Islamist. And here we are in this supposedly red state with pink leadership. You know, we got to wake up out there. Like I said, they have a plan. Google the explanatory memorandum. It lays it all out for you. It lays out the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, remember, the Muslim Brotherhood started in Egypt. Does anybody think they're any different in America? There's no difference in the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt than what there is in America. The tactics may vary for now. There's no difference in the Muslim Brotherhood and the Taliban in terms of ideology. The ideology and the goals are the same. Over here, the Muslim Brotherhood that you deal with, many of them, they try to come across as friendly. Most of them speak good English, you know, well-heeled, well-dressed, all the right degrees. A lot of them are in positions or hold prestigious positions that probably should not be holding, by the way. And so people trust them. You know, I remember a couple years ago when Haslam, Governor Haslam, appointed Samar Ali to the Economic Development, the International Division of the Tennessee Economic Development Council. She's no longer there, by the way. She works for a private law firm now. I found that out about a month ago. But when he appointed her, and there was, of course, those of us who had a problem with somebody that was an expert in Sharia finance being appointed to that position, a lot of people said, well, you know, her dad is this doctor, and he's been the head of the Tennessee Medical Association numerous times. Great guy, blah, 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 blah. Matter of fact, I wrote an article about it and laying out my concerns, and there was a guy, I'm not going to mention his name, but he ran for office a few years ago, and he's a doctor in West Tennessee, and he wrote me, emailed me, said, hey, you know, you're all wrong about this guy. I met him. He's the friendliest guy in the world, and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you just don't get it. They can do that. They can be that way. I mean, if that's what it calls for to further their cause, think back to the 9/11 hijackers. Nobody thought anything about the 9/11 hijackers. I mean, they were hanging out in strip clubs. They seemed to be very westernized. Nobody thought they were going to do what they did. That's part of the Kia. It's all part of it. Another thing I think that people, when we talk about the threat and we talk about what they're attempting to do, they're attempting to subvert our Constitution and take our country over, okay? Now, that doesn't mean that immediately they're going to launch attacks, although I would not be a bit surprised to see those kind of things, happen again here. You always have that threat, but they are trying to, as they say in their memorandum, take us over from the inside with our help. We're going to help bring down our own miserable, bring down their house with their own miserable hand, or words of that effect. I'm paraphrasing and I'm probably messing that up, but that's what they're doing. And so not everybody is, they're not going to come across as hostile necessarily, but you have to look at their goals and look at their ideology. And think about it. It's like I said, a few years ago, now that we have Obama in office, they took away even references to radical Islam. Now, what I'm going to say might make a few of you mad, but George Bush was a fool, okay? President Bush was a fool. He's not as big a fool as Obama, but he's a fool, because right after September 11th, he made it a point to get out there and talk about this great religion of peace that was hijacked. Well, no, it's not a great religion of peace. The religion and the people that did this, they were doing what their religion directs them to do, bottom line. But at least he used the term, he did recognize radical Islam. Now, I disagree with the whole concept of radical Islam, because it's all radical. Islam is radical. Okay, does that mean that every Muslim will potentially kill you or do something to you physically or blow something up? No. It's just like in the military. Not everybody's job in the military is to close with and destroy the enemy. That's the job of the armor, the infantry. The artillery has its place. But then, of course, you have medics. You have clerks. You have supply. You have mechanics. It's all part of an army. Well, it's the same thing with the Muslims. The same thing with the Muslim Brotherhood in this country. Not everybody's a trigger puller. Not everybody's a door kicker. Not everybody's a bomb guy. Some are just financiers. Some are, maybe they help launder it. Others make powerful government connections and, convince people that should know better that, hey, we're good guys. And then, of course, if you paid any attention at all, you know that CARE, they're always playing the victim. They're always whining. Anytime anybody points out even the truth about radical Islam, and I hate to use that term, but they point out the things about groups like Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and others, when they point out those facts, they don't even want you to talk about that. Our military and our law enforcement no longer recognize Islam as a threat at all, or at least officially. I'm sure that many of the people on the ground do. It is scary, though. I can tell you from some of my experiences, yeah, the higher-ups don't get it. They've bought into this line, too, that it's just a few bad apples. You would think after 12 years of fighting that more of them would have come to the conclusion that there's more than a few, and, oh, by the way, you can't trust these people. And would it be a problem? I mean, one of the things I read today was that about a third of the Muslims in America are native-born, and many of them are African-American. A lot of them probably proselytized and converted in prison. So, you know, relocating them is not an option because they're citizens. However, we don't have to be stupid about it. You have to, I mean, good Lord, we recognize that the neo-Nazis are a threat. We recognize skinheads are a threat. Recognize other groups like that are a threat. And for the most part, those groups are ostracized. Most decent people don't want to be associated with somebody who's a neo-Nazi or somebody who's in the Klan or somebody who's in some other radical organization like that. And not to say that the threat goes away just because most decent people won't associate with them, but, you know, I don't understand why an ideology like Islam is not found by most people to be just as abhorrent as the Nazis, as the skinheads, as the Klan. I don't understand. It seems to me like it should be on the same plane, and people should be just as reviled and disgusted and concerned and leery of interfacing with people that are part of that ideology as they are these others that I've mentioned. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman, Drew Brooks, calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and Hangar Flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. And I'm going to go back to we're going to probably stay on this topic until the guest comes on here and might veer off into a couple of other things. But I want to go back and clarify somebody we mentioned earlier, and that was this Jim Hart character and the difference. And granted, might not have had the same guys in charge of the GOP, but understandably, because of the views, the evolutionary racist views of Jim Hart, the GOP correctly distanced themselves from him and said, hey, look, we're not going to allow you to run on the ticket. I think that's within the right of a party to do that, and I think it's within the right of a party. You know, I think they should do those kind of things, but it just blows my mind that somebody that had never advocated violence, and although he had an immoral view towards minorities, and, you know, I think believing in evolution, quite honestly, is immoral, but he did not advocate the kind of things that the Islamists advocate. So here, in just the span of, well, less than 10 years, the party goes from shunning a disturbed old man, rightfully so, let me stress that, to embracing somebody who just far worse in their ideology, far worse. And I imagine they're going to brag on it. They're probably going to be proud of it. You know, hey, this is the outreach they talked about. So I would encourage, if you're a Republican and you live in Tennessee, call your county chair. I know I'm going to be talking to mine later on. He's actually at a meeting right now. And yes, for the record, I'm no longer in the county, in the GOP. I'm in the Constitution Party, but he's a friend. I'm still going to call him and let him know what is going on. You know, a couple of years ago, after Samar Ali was appointed, and we found out about the relationship between our state Homeland Security and AMAC, which the governor and the director of Department of Homeland Security and Safety, Bill Gibbons, all denied, but we've seen the paper. We know it exists. There were, I think, 16 county chairs that signed a resolution basically condemning this, along with other problems, along with other things. And it was directed towards the governor, okay? This one, although I'm sure the governor blessed off on it, I have no doubt in my mind the governor blessed off on it, I'm also sure that he is not going to leave any fingerprints on this one. So Chris Devaney owns this. Bob Duvall in Davidson County owns this. And whoever that chairperson, it was a woman, actually, from the SEC that talked this guy into running, convinced him to run or asked him to run, they own this. And we need to definitely pin it on them. We need to publicize this. We just need to pound and pound on this. All right, we're going to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism radio show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism radio show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number 718-305-7176. In just a few minutes, Senator Jim Somerville will join us, and we'll talk to him about some legislation he's been involved with, legislation he hopes to be involved with in the future, and, of course, his reelection campaign. We spent the last few minutes talking about the Tennessee Islamist candidate for the GOP, and we're going to switch gears here just a little bit. Something I found out today that I was not aware of. Now, it's not too hard to peg Carl Dean, the mayor of Nashville, as a far-left liberal. But I was told something today that I'd never heard, and I completely trust the source. And when I think about it, I have to say it really does not surprise me. Apparently, when he ran for mayor the first time, whenever that was, you know, he had made the statement somewhere, and I'm assuming it didn't get widely publicized till after the fact, that he wanted to make Tennessee like a mini version of San Francisco in regards to how gay-friendly it was. Those are my words. I'm paraphrasing. So that's pretty sick that that would be the vision for a mayor of any city, and especially any city in Tennessee. But, you know, a great city like Nashville, the capital of the great state of Tennessee, and we have a mayor that wants it to make it a little mini version of San Francisco. I guess that maybe that's what the AMP is all about, you know, to simulate the trolleys they have there. But just think about that, how sick that is. And you know, we have enough problems in that area already, but, you know, do you want San Francisco in Nashville, right in the heart of our state, as part of the country? Now, what I'm wondering is, you know, here lately, it seems like Governor Haslam and Mayor Dean, even though Dean's a Democrat, of course you could argue Haslam's a Democrat as well, they've been pretty buddy-buddy. You know, they seem to have a good relationship. Now, it's an election year, and I don't think Governor Haslam has a Republican challenger. If he does, he doesn't have a very prominent Republican challenger. I know Sean Crowell is running on the Constitution Party ticket, and I'm definitely going to be voting for Sean. It's good not to have – it's good to have somebody to vote for, because I'm not going to vote for Haslam. But I just wonder – I'm going to see if I can't find either – printed copy, or see if there's video of these comments by Dean, and I'd just be curious to, see where the governor stands on that. You know, what do you think about Mayor Dean's wanting to turn Nashville into a little San Francisco? Are you okay with that? Are you good with that? Do you want to have our state capital? Do you want to be that place to be a magnet for flamers and perverts from across the South and across the world, for that matter? Just curious. I mean, I wonder how he'd react to that. Anyway, we're being attacked on so many fronts. That's one of them. Common Core, I saw earlier today where Lamar Alexander is doing everything he can not to talk about Common Core, not to be associated with Common Core. And obviously, you know the guy supports it. I think a while back he was kind of giving it some support, and he's backed away from that because he knows it's not popular. And, you know, it would really be great to get rid of Lamar. And I hope that Joe Carr pulls it off. I don't know, you know, what the current odds are of that. I do know that there's an independent running, that in the event that Lamar wins the primary, there's an independent named Danny Page. Met Danny a couple times. And very conservative, very constitutionally-minded, good Christian man. And so, once again, whether it results in the guy that I want to win winning the election, at least I have somebody to vote for other than, you know, I don't have to vote for Lamar. The other option would have been not to vote. You know, couldn't vote for a Democrat, didn't want to vote for Lamar, not going to vote for Lamar. We got to do something in this supposedly red state of Tennessee. We have a pink legislature at best. In the House, there's about maybe 15 people that come to mind that are reliable, hardcore conservatives. In the Senate, the number's even smaller. I won't get into names, but the numbers are even smaller. And, you know, it's really important that our state stand up for us to the federal government. I don't see that happening with the current governor. So hopefully we could get him out of there. Maybe the pilot mess will splash over onto him and get rid of him for us. I'm not going to hold my breath on that, but that would be great. You know, however we get rid of the guy would be, you know, whether he's defeated in an election by a long shot or there's some legal troubles, whatever the case might be, that would be great. Tennessee deserves a lot better. The people are much more conservative than their leaders. Yet we kind of have in the GOP in Tennessee, which has a supermajority, we should be passing some serious conservative legislation here in Tennessee. We should be leading the country in conservative legislation on all fronts, you name it, on the Islamist threat, on pushing back against the homosexual activism, standing up for First Amendment rights, standing up to the federal government. We should be leading the pack, but we're not. Like I said, we're pink at best. We've got to get a real governor in there, a real conservative. You know, we had Ron Ramsey ran in 2010. I supported the guy. I thought he was a real conservative. I've been so disappointed. When Bill Haslam lets him put his boots on these days, the only thing Ron wants to do is kick a real conservative, you know, like Mae Beavers. That's pretty much seems to be the purpose of Ron's boots anymore. He doesn't do it to advance anything conservative. And that's sad. That's really sad. Had great hopes. Somebody told me early on that he was not what I thought he was. And I'm like, that's just – because the person who's supporting Haslam, I'm like, okay, come on. You got to be able to see that Haslam is not a conservative. And so they were wrong about Haslam. He was not as conservative as they thought he was going to be. And I was wrong about Ramsey. Because, you know, think about it. As the president of the Senate and somebody who's been up there for a long time, still has a lot of power, you know, he really could have put some pressure on Haslam to do some things. And I'm not saying that he hasn't done it at all, and I'm not saying that he's always in lockstep, but I'm going to say that he has been overall a huge disappointment and has not, in my opinion, used – well, I guess what tells it all to me is how he has used his power to stifle good conservative legislation like that Senator Beavers and others have put out. And, of course, in the House, you've got Beth Harwell, who does the governor's bidding, stop anything there that a governor doesn't want. So hopefully we can get somebody else as a speaker this year. That would be great to get rid of Beth Harwell and get a real conservative in there. But that's where we are. People are going to have to stay involved, really pay attention, ask the people running for office hard questions. And don't just, you know, don't just vote the R. Certainly don't vote the D, but don't just vote the R. Make sure it's a conservative R. Make sure it's an R with a constitutional mindset. Make sure it's an R that sees the importance of standing up to the federal government, and that if the states don't stand up, then we have system failure. And that there's no way to turn the tide back without the states standing up. Or there's no way, let me put it this way, there's no way to avert disaster without the states standing up. Because, you know, we do have a Second Amendment right. At some point in time, you have to use it. It's kind of like a fire extinguisher, too. When it comes to that time, when your house is on fire and it's burning down, there's nobody you have to call up and ask if you can use the fire extinguisher. Same thing with the Second Amendment. At some point in time, you just have to break the glass and use it. And if our fire department, if our state government stands, you know, does the right thing and gets here, our house won't burn down. But if they keep playing the D.C. game and just complaining about D.C. but not standing up to D.C., and if we keep electing people like Bill Haslam, then we're not going to push back. There's no real pushback on the federal government as long as we keep operating that way. So those are some things to keep in mind. Some other thing I was reading earlier today, and it's really kind of about, you've probably heard about the Smithfield Farms purchase by the Chinese. I didn't realize they'd purchased 420 farms in America. And, you know, that's an American company. It's bad enough when we lose business, you know, when our companies pack up and go to Mexico. That's terrible. But I think it's even worse when an American company sells out to the Chinese and the Chinese have control of an American company on our soil. Granted, I understand they're just following the government's lead. That's pretty much what the government's done for the last 20 years. We've been barring from China for the last at least 15 years. And so I guess the businesses are just following suit. But it's wrong. It's flat out wrong, and it's putting us at risk. And it seems to me like no decent American would sell to the Chinese. That's my thought anyway. But they have. I don't know how we reverse that. I don't know what the percentage of properties in the U.S. are owned by China now. I know at one time back in the 80s, the Japanese owned quite a bit. I think they still do. I know the Brits own quite a bit. But the Chinese, of those, the Chinese scare me the most. And, I mean, they're still a communist country. They've embraced capitalism to a degree, but primarily just to fuel their goals, just to provide the money they need to expand. And of course, we've been so stupid with China over the last 20 years, both administrating all Republican and Democrat administrations in terms of technology. we've just given away, you know, pretty much given away the store. All right, we're up against a hard break. Don't go away. We'll take a short break. We'll come right back, and we'll talk with Senator Jim Somerville. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For the Talk Radio News Service, I'm Justin Duckham. The Senate yesterday evening failed to secure the 60 votes needed to override a Republican filibuster on legislation that would have enhanced energy efficiency while also guaranteeing a vote on the Keystone Pipeline. The final vote came in at 55-36, with only three Republicans crossing the aisle. A new study published in JAMA Internal Medicine concludes that overtreatment and procedures covered by Medicare comes with an $8 billion price tag for the U.S. The study found that up to 42% of Medicare recipients received treatment that they did not, in fact, need. And Senator Marco Rubio unveiled a new retirement plan that would allow all Americans to join federal retirement accounts, similar to those enjoyed by lawmakers, while raising the retirement age and lowering the growth rate of Social Security for wealthier Americans. Speaking to the National Press Club, Rubio warned that if lawmakers fail to act, Social Security funds will dissipate and future seniors will lose their safety net. Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration. And that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with Senator Jim Somerville from Dixon. Senator, how are you doing tonight?
Fine, sir. Thank you. Beautiful day, wasn't it, in Middle Tennessee?
Oh, it was. It was.
And I'm so proud to be a part of the didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm so proud to be part of the Marsha Blackburn for President fan club.
Okay.
She's my co-guest, isn't she?
No. Matter of fact, her primary challenger is going to be following you. His name is Jacob Graham.
Okay, well, fine. Anyway, sorry.
That's fine. That's fine. Well, I hope you're doing well, and I appreciate you being with us. We were just talking during the break, and this was a rough year up on the in session as far as getting a whole lot done, and. Let's just go ahead and kind of skip to what we were talking to in reference to budget. You mentioned that the only real responsibility is to pass the budget. And, how do you see some possible problems with that? You want to elaborate a little bit?
Well, we've had some revenue declines in the sales tax, and it could be the winter weather. It could have been slow consumer spending during the holidays. We've also seen some fall off in corporate excise taxes. That one is peculiar to me, but for whatever reason, our revenue took a little dip, and we had to balance the budget against our income. We can't do what those guys in Congress do, men and women do, and spend money we don't have. We've got to spend money within our means. And so we had to look carefully at every single budget item presented by the administration and by senators and representatives. I had a few things in the budget I wanted to include, but every one of them got knocked down, but so did everybody else's. There was no extra money for anything. And that's okay, because we've achieved our goal of keeping within our, living within our means. And that's one of the reasons that Tennessee is so strong economically. We don't run deficits. We our pension funds are in place, in balance. We don't have an income tax. We never will. And so it's an attractive place for business. And when people look at that who want to invest somewhere, Tennessee is a strong business state.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned there's things that you wanted to, that you would like to have done, and you did try to reform K through 12 education this year and give the parents a little more power. You know, and we'll talk about that a little bit, some of the things you tried to accomplish there.
Well, this has been an issue since I got there in 2010. Yes, that's basically the Republican majority position, but we need to give parents the choices and give them the money to spend on their choices. If they want to spend it for charter schools, fine. If they want to spend it for vouchers, if they want to spend it for homeschooling, great. If they want to spend it for public schools that we hope we can keep improving, that's great too. But it should be parental choices. They don't have to. Public schools shouldn't have a monopoly on what our parents do to help our children's schooling. So that's our basic principle and legislation. We haven't got it all right. We haven't got it all right yet. We're still working on how to make this work, how to bring Tennessee children up to the top tier of youngsters in academic achievement. And we're slowly working on it. We're going to try some things that won't work. We're going to try some things that will work, and we'll adapt accordingly.
Now you said give the parents money. Now, where exactly is it? Because you know, we just talked about the budget. Where exactly would this money come from?
Well, much of the local tax, property tax, is spent for schools.
Right.
Let them spend it where they want to. Give it back to the parents to spend where they want to.
Okay, so basically the legislature would direct and or allow, I don't, which the local counties to take some of that property tax money and give it to the parents for them to use. Is that accurate?
That's my idea. Now, that's not going to be popular everywhere. Certainly is not popular with my school board here in my own home county. But it's my idea, and I hope it will gain some traction in the next legislature. My point, David, is that it should be parental choice.
Right.
And you spend the money for your children where you want to spend it for their best education, even including faith-based academies. Now, that's going to be a First Amendment issue, I expect, but if you want to send your child to a faith-based school, as long as that child's getting and keeping up to standards, great, fine with me. Let the courts figure that one out.
Yeah. Now, the state gives a certain amount of money to each district, right?
They do, yes.
And that's from from state sales tax?
I don't have the math here, my friend. I'm an English major, so it's not my area of expertise.
Okay.
But the idea, the concept is what I'm trying to get at. And I think one of the – I got more mail about Common Core this term than I've gotten about any issue over the years. Some people say, well, folks just don't understand it. All right, it doesn't really matter. They don't want it. They don't want it in their schools. They don't want it for their children. Fine. It's their choice. And I voted with their choice. I voted against Common Core, implementation of the standards. And I'll do it again if I need to. All these things are very complicated, and I'm not trying to dodge a question or an issue, but I did listen to my constituents on Common Core, and I said, no, no, no.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that vote. Even though I'm not actually your constituent, I do appreciate that vote. And, you know, like you say, it's parental choice. So I see there's some – you're being consistent. You know, you said they should have choice in school, and, well, they should have choice in curriculum, and I like that.
Yes.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is it seems like about every 4 or 5 years there's a new next big thing, you know, Goals 2000, No Child Left Behind, now you got – and I'm like, you know – okay, before we had all this, we put people on the moon back in 69.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm thinking, why are we having to reinvent the wheel? Is it a matter that we need new standards, or do we just need to enforce the old standards that worked?
Well, I know it's a terrible cliche, and I, before I say it, I'm going to repent of it, but if the schools that I went to as a child, if our current schools were as good as those that I went to, wow. Wow, our children would want for nothing. I had great teachers in this little poor school system in Dixon County, Tennessee. I learned so much. I didn't know what I was learning. I didn't appreciate them at the time. But they were great teachers and great schools, and we didn't spend a lot of money on education. Your question is a good one. I don't know where we jumped the track. I have to confess, I'm just ignorant of that. But yeah. We've moved from something that worked to something that doesn't work, and I don't know why or how.
Yeah.
People say go back to the fundamentals. Yes, reading, writing, arithmetic, great. I'm for that. And I don't know. I admit a certain amount of perplexity here, but I do remember my great teachers in a poor little town gave me so much many years ago.
Yeah.
And I believe that we could do that again if we can give teachers and reward teachers for being good teachers and reward them for, constantly improving themselves over their careers, going back to school to learn more. We should honor our teachers. But also make sure that every teacher in every classroom is a great teacher. And no more mediocrity. No more mediocrity.
Yeah, there has to be standards. I do agree that there has to be standards for the kids and there has to be standards for the teachers. But
yes.
I think we do have to think them through. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Senator Jim Somerville from Dixon County. And the hall tax. You know, I don't know why we're still stuck with that thing. I know they did something on it, but we didn't completely kill that beast, did we?
No, we didn't. I tried to. Part of the problem is, David. I'm not so good at arithmetic, but there is an element of it that goes element of the revenue that goes to the local governments. If it just went to the state, we could say, okay, let's cut services at the state level. And I'm not sure what part of it is paid over to local governments, but that's the problem. That's why it's so hard to do. Now we will kill it. We will kill it. Governor Haslam has advocated that. Republican majority is advocating that. We're going to do it. It's going to take longer than I wish it would, but it's going to happen. It's a bad tax. It's a bad tax. Well, all taxes are bad, but it's a bad, especially a bad tax because it taxes investment, taxes initiative, taxes people making money who want to move to Tennessee and live on their incomes from their investments over a lifetime of success. Just a bad deal. But I understand it better than I did when I first got there why it has to go so slowly. We have a very thin revenue stream in Tennessee, in part because we don't have income tax, and that's fine. But if you cut some of that revenue, you're going to have to find concomitant services to cut, and then it becomes hard. It becomes really sticky because people have their little areas of cut his money, but not my money.
Cuts are good for the other guy. Cuts for thee, but not for me.
That's right. You got it. And then it becomes policy choices.
If it were up to Senator Somerville, what would you cut? What are some other things that you think could still be cut?
Well, I'm happy to tell you that I'm going to give myself a little pat on the back here. Sorry.
That's fine.
The Haslam administration picked up on the idea of privatizing some of our services in state parks. Why should the state be running restaurants and motels in state parks? private function if there ever was one. They picked, now, that's a very small amount of revenue, my friend. Of course it is. But the principle is, why should the government run something that private enterprise can do better? Other areas I would cut would be arts, cultural, recreation, entertainment business. Why is Tennessee in supporting an arts commission? They don't spend much money, but still, why should we be about people's entertainment? Goodness gracious, people can find recreation. They can find things they enjoy without state support. There are lots of. We have so many boards and commissions, some of which are pretty much useless and could be shut down. And we're getting there. I think the Republican majority is doing a good job with looking at how we're spending our money. But as I said before, I'm sorry to repeat myself, it just takes longer than someone of my idealism thinks it should. But we're heading in the right direction.
Now, I've heard this a few times, and I don't know if you can explain all of this. We get, what, roughly 40% of our funding for the federal from the federal government?
Yes,
is that accurate?
Yes, we do. That's true.
So how do we wean ourselves off of that?
I wish I could tell you, my friend. I suppose most of it is TVA and Medicare, Medicaid, and Oak Ridge, and college support with student loans. Well, we've made the mistake of, buying into this, and now we're going to have to face the question of what happens if the federal government defaults on any of this.
Right.
I don't know. I simply don't know what's going to happen. I wish we hadn't done it in the first place, but you know what happens when a county or local government says, okay, we got this grant possibility, we'll get $80 from the federal government, we have to contribute $20 for every dollar. That's hard to resist. And yet you're buying into the whole dependency situation. And that's what we've done in Tennessee.
And that's one of the things, to be honest with you, I hear, okay, I'm glad that we manage what we're given well, okay, in terms of keeping within a budget. At the same time, 40%, I mean, I know if I had to do without 40% of my income right now, that'd be pretty rough. And
would be.
Seeing that the U.S., I see the U.S. economy as the Titanic, and we're in a nice little boat tethered to the Titanic, which does us no good once the Titanic goes down if we're still tied to it. I wish that we would attack that a little harder. I know that's a challenge, but I think that's something we have to do.
Well, I've advised my good friend, Majority Leader Senator Mark Norris, let's look at this whole question of federalism. We're going to have to change our whole definition, our whole posture toward Washington, and sooner rather than later, because it's going to drag us down, as you say.
Yeah.
If we're 40% of our income is from the federal government, we are a dependency. We're not sovereign anymore. And that troubles me greatly. What are we going to do? I don't even know where to start. I confess that. But we're going to have to bear down and figure it out, because the days of the welfare state are over.
Yeah.
The days
of
Washington funding state and local governments are over. And we just got to – I don't know. Somebody said to me the other day, David, somebody said, well, we haven't had enough pain yet. And that may be true, but we're going to get a lot of it pretty soon.
Yeah. We're not going to want it when we get it. I'll guarantee you that.
No, we sure aren't.
Now, one of the things, and looking at the notes here, that I got from you, pass an amendment to the Tennessee Constitution that will outlaw both discrimination and preference in public employment, public contracting, and other areas based on race, sex, or ethnicity. 8 states already have similar laws on their books, and you've looked into doing that. And, you know, you hats off to you, because anybody who attacks affirmative action is automatically labeled, as a racist. It was kind of like several years ago, you never mentioned cutting Social Security, okay, if you were in politics at the national level. Well, my hat's off to you, because, non-discrimination works both ways. And colorblind, and I think that I think that you, like me, believe in the term or what was said, you know, to judge somebody by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. That's a great quote, and I believe it. Yeah, Martin Luther King said it. And I believe that, but a lot of people that are in power, they say it, but they don't believe it. And you caught a lot of flack for some of the things you proposed, and I, you know, my hat is off to you. My hat is off to you for standing up. And I appreciate that because, you know, freedom is colorblind, bottom line.
It is colorblind, and we should be a nation of colorblindness. And race has no place, race and ethnicity and those kinds of preferences have no place in American life or American law. America, the dream has been fulfilled. Doors open to everybody. Just walk through them. Opportunity for everybody. And if we could keep identifying people by their color, we're not going to end this.
No, sad no, it perpetuates it.
Perpetuates it.
Yeah, it just perpetuates it.
And I, my good friends in the Black Caucus, and they are good friends, I try to reason with them along that line, and they seem to think that there's some advantage to black folks or whoever they seek for in this, but there's not. What if you walk into a classroom and you have a three or four youngsters who happen to be black? I don't like to identify people by race, but you wonder why they're there. Are they there because they've earned their way? Are they there because some affirmative action quota puts them there?
Yeah.
We shouldn't even have to ask those questions. They should be there on merit and no other reason. No other reason.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they can do it.
The courts seem to be going that way in some cases.
Wow, yes.
Thing.
We got a great decision out of Michigan last week. I'm so pumped by that. Upholding the right of Michigan voters to write anti-preference into their constitution. Yes, great. Wonderful. I think we've turned the corner on this stuff. Now, I wish I could have lived to see the end of this kind of color awareness, color specificity. I won't see it now. I know that. I'm very sorry. But my children will. My children will. My grandchildren will. They don't understand a bit of it. They don't see it. And thank God we are at that place with them. I wish I could have been, but I won't be. But they are. That's the point. We've handed on to them a colorblind society. And thank God.
And you'll have had a hand in it, something to be proud of.
Well, small one.
Now,
but,
you're going, obviously, we're going to talk about your campaign a little bit. Got a little less than 10 minutes left, but you're going out to California this summer. I want to talk about that real quick and then at least talk a little bit about the campaign. But you're going to an event in California. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I'm going to the Reagan Library. I went there last year, paid my way, to meet with folks at the American Civil Rights Institute. And they are some of the prime movers in the same constitutional amendment we were talking about. California passed this in 1995, wrote a colorblind amendment to their constitution. If California can do that, good grief, why can't we?
Why can't Tennessee, yeah.
Yeah, and the, seven other states, either statutory law, constitutional amendment, or executive order. We can do this. We can make this happen. And California is better off for it. Okay, people are going to say, well, if we do that, then there's going to be a drop in hiring of these various categories of folks. California, that happened, but only for a little while. What was happening was that the great universities of California, UCLA, Berkeley, the others, were admitting students who were not qualified to go there, admitting them on race. Now, these students dropped out. Some of them probably never to go back to college again because they weren't qualified to come and got discouraged. Many of the others went to the junior colleges of California, then re-enrolled in the great universities. So it's not going to hurt even folks who are trying to struggle to get by with their, even if they've been not given the best undergraduate education or the best high school education.
Yeah.
They can still do it. We've got community colleges. That's what they're for.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt folks who want opportunity. You just got to, you know, I'm so pleased and proud of the prospects here. I just,
I was going to say the bottom line is college is not for everybody. Black, white,
it's
green,
not,
yellow, it's not for
it's
everybody.
Not, it's not for everybody, no. And I disagree with my friend Bill Haslam about that. It's not for everybody. And there are lots of other ways to, if you don't know what to do with yourself, let's say you're 18, you're finishing high school, you don't know what direction to pursue, join the military, join the Army, join the Navy, join the Air Force, Marines. It'll square you up, it'll give you a sense of no excuses, and you'll find yourself, and you'll get a good scholarship out of it. Now, it's not for everybody either, but it's for some young folks. It's tough. It's hard to be young now. It's much harder to be young now than it was when I was a kid. And you have to make decisions that you're not qualified to make, you're not ready to make them. I feel for young people. I teach them, and I feel for them terribly. Hard world coming at them.
Got a quick question for you before
sure.
we – I want to definitely want to hit the campaign issue, but, okay, the your bill – I guess the Human Rights Commission put a fiscal note on your bill that killed the bill. Well, my question is, how does the human – how did they get to do that? What part do they have in that?
Well, it's a mystery to me, too. A fiscal note will kill a bill, a huge fiscal note will kill a bill. And that's what they did somehow. I don't know how they did it. I guess I'll just leave it at that. I don't know how they did it. But they were, of course, opposed to it because they've got a bureaucratic investment in who they are and what they do. It's about jobs. Somehow they, I guess, went to the Fiscal Review Committee and said this is going to cost umpteen million dollars, which it wouldn't. And the Fiscal Review Committee took them at their word. That was a big mistake. But Fiscal Review notes are mysterious to me.
Yeah. Well, now, okay, you're up for re-election, and you are going to run and hopefully win, and that's you're going to term limit yourself, but let's
yes,
talk
sir.
About your current campaign. How's it going?
McCann's probably the last person to ask, but I'll do my best.
okay.
First of all, I don't have any money. I hope to acquire some and raise some, but right now what I'm doing is going door to door. I hope to hit many houses, and I can't go to every house in the district, but I can go to lots of them, thousands of them. I mean, so many great people, just so many kind, sweet, rural folks in Tennessee. They invariably greet me at the door. They take my card. Some want to talk, some don't. But I've just never met such kindness. I'm just knocked out by it. So I'm going to keep that up. It's funny, I'm 67 years old, and it's hard to walk for many hours, but I do. And I show up on people's doorsteps hot and sweaty, and I have to use their banisters to climb to their door and ring the doorbell. I'm going to do it, though. That's all I know to do. What I'm not going to do is appear at these beauty contests of, you know, candidates who are a lot better looking than I am. I'm going to do what I can do well, talk to voters individually, small groups. If I can raise some money, I'll probably put in some little TV time toward the end. But, you know, on the whole, I'm philosophic. It's in God's hands, not mine. And I'll be at peace with whatever the result is. I work for the voters. They hire me. If they want to hire somebody else, that's okay with me. I respect their choice.
Do you have any events planned? I mean, I know you don't want to do the beauty contest thing, but do you have any events planned?
Well, I'd say no. I'm just, every day I hit the pavement. That's all the events I have right now. I'll probably set up some, but not at the moment.
Okay. Website?
Got a website. I'm not very good on computers, but phone number. Can I give you a phone number?
Sure.
615-375-8544. 615-375-8544. It's my campaign headquarters. It's also my home phone. I'll be happy to talk to anybody anytime about anything.
Okay. Well, good luck to you in the campaign. I think you've got what? There's one other primary challenger?
I have actually three others.
Three others. Okay. Now, which district is it? And I know it's Dixon, but there's other counties involved as well.
Yes, Dixon, Hickman, Humphreys, Cheatham, and Robertson, five counties.
Okay. That's a pretty big area. Pretty big districts.
Senate districts are pretty big. There's only 33 of us to represent all of Tennessee, so most of our districts are pretty large based on population. And I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed just meeting people on the doorsteps. It means a great deal to me. As I say, I work for them. They hire me, and they can decide in August if whether they want to hire me again.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I've enjoyed having you on. I wish we had more time and like to have you back on.
I'll be happy to come anytime, my friend. Thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you. Take care. God bless. Appreciate what you
do. God bless you. God bless you, sir, and all your listeners.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night. America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is a reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution Committee to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time, and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Jacob Brim. He is running against Marsha Blackburn in the 7th District. She has a challenger. Whoa. All right, and we'll have a little trouble here. Where did we go? Oh, no. 30, sorry, having a little technical glitch here. Be right back.
Hello, this is Robin Zanner.
Hello, this is Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick for Rad.
Some people think it's fun to drive drunk, but that's unacceptable.
Be smart. If you drink,
don't drive.
Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Michael Behrman, inviting you to join me every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on The Michael Behrman Show. Right here on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number 718-305-7176. And we have Jacob Brim on the line with us. And Jacob is running against Marsha Blackburn here in the 7th Congressional District. And that's my district. She's my current rep in Congress. And I have no qualms whatsoever with getting rid of her for somebody more conservative. How you doing tonight, Jacob?
No, I'm doing pretty good, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
I appreciate you coming on. And let's get right into it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm a United States Army veteran. I'm running for Marsha Blackburn's seat. I did 8 years in the Army. Had a wonderful time doing that. Got out to make a difference and to give the people a voice back in D.C., something that I think they haven't had in quite a many years. Very proudly married to – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish. I'm sorry.
I was going to say I'm very proudly married to my wife. We've been married for 8 years, and I believe she's listening tonight. And my son, he's probably listening too. So I just wanted to give them a quick shout-out, you know.
Okay. Now, okay, a lot of times when people decide to get in politics, they decide, okay, you know, I think maybe I'll run for county commission or – state house, state senate, or something like that. But you know, not only are you throwing your hat in the big ring, but you're going up against an incumbent with a lot of money, a lot of name recognition. A lot of people are still under the illusion that she's a conservative. And let me clarify that. I believe she has conservative views, but she hasn't really stood up. Okay, And that's just my personal opinion. And matter of fact, in the circles I travel in, I hear that quite a bit. So, but what made you go straight to the big house, I guess you could say, to the big game?
Well, you know, when you're in the Army, you talk to a lot of people. And, you know, the NCOs, we all sit around and kind of chat a bit. I've been interested in politics for a long time. I decided when I got out of the Army I wanted to actually make a difference. And you know, you can do a lot at the local level, but I wanted to make a difference for our military and for people on a national level, because I don't think they were being represented especially well. So I decided to put my hat in the ring for the big time, for the House, because that's where the money is. We have a national debt issue, unemployment issues. We have all these problems, and they're not being solved. So unless someone's willing to stand up and have a backbone and be willing to go in and stand firm, then it's not going to make a difference. So I decided to run with the purse. I decided to go where the money is, because if you control the money, then you can control a little bit more of what happens to the country.
Yeah. Well, in the 7th District, you know, I know that the Congress over the last few years, they have voted to repeal Obamacare I don't know how many times, and I'm sure, I have no doubt in my mind here in the 7th District that Marsha Blackburn voted every time to repeal Obamacare. That I'm aware of, she never voted to defund it, okay? And like you said, the power of the purse is in the House. And we definitely need somebody there that will watch it and is willing to stand up. Now, how do you balance all that out? Because, you know, here's what they do. Whenever you come up to a, you know, crunch time on the budget, they always play these games of, well, you know, if we don't pass this budget, the veterans aren't going to get paid. You know, the retirees won't get paid. Our guys over in Afghanistan and Iraq are not going to get paid. You know, they always do that, those type things. So what's your response to that? Because you know it's inevitable.
Yeah, that's one of the things that actually made me sick to my stomach while I was in, is twice that our veterans and our service members were used as political pawns to get the budget passed and to get their way up in Congress. You know, it's hard to go against passing a budget when everyone's needed, but the best thing that we can do is always go, look, okay, well, we don't want to pass the budget because we don't support the budget. We don't support the bills that have been put in it because they encroach on the freedom. So let's pass the veterans budget. Let's pass a budget that is specifically to ensure that our veterans get paid while we hash out the rest of it. Sometimes I think a line-by-line budget would be a good thing to do, where they go bill by bill and just say, okay, well, this is what we need for this budget. Do we support it, yay or nay, and go on it that way. I mean, that might be a good option.
So what are some of the things that are going to guide you when it comes to, you know, when you've got a bill before you, what's your guideline? I mean, in terms of, okay, do I vote for this or not?
It's actually a pretty simple guideline. It's 4 steps. Step 1, is it constitutional? If it's constitutional, then move down to step 2. If it's not, immediately vote no. Step 2, does it increase national debt? If it does, vote no. If it doesn't, move down to step 3. Step 3 says, does it represent the core values of the people that I represent? If it does, then consider to vote yes on it. And if it does not, vote no, because that's how a representative ought to vote. And then in the end, look at it and say, okay, in a hypothetical situation, if a bill was 99.9% a good bill, but it had 1%, 0.1% where it encroached on someone's constitutional rights, the first thing I would do is attempt to get an amendment passed to get that gone. And then if they said, nope, that amendment's not going to fly, you pass the bill as, I'll vote no on the bill. Because Congress has a second duty, and that duty is to protect the constitutional rights of all American citizens.
Exactly, and they've forgotten that. It seems to be all about the money these days. Now, what are some of your other core values, you know, other things that you believe in? I mean, you're in a very conservative district. We may not have a rep that really votes conservative when it counts, but you're in a very conservative district, so what are some of your other core beliefs?
I am extremely pro-life, and I support traditional family values. Those are near and dear to my heart, and I'm unapologetic with it. That's just how I believe in those. I also hold the economy to my heart, because I think that Congress's job is to continually facilitate an environment that promotes job creation, job growth. And they haven't been doing that.
When you say that it's Congress's job to facilitate growth, is it their job to facilitate growth or their job to get out of the way so we can grow?
Well, no, you can facilitate growth by getting out the way. So what you can do is put yourself on a level, put the country on a level playing field. So we can't facilitate growth by regulating jobs, but we can facilitate growth by promoting the environment that puts us on a level playing field. I mean, take the corporate tax, for instance. Right now we're on a worldwide system. Worldwide says that we tax companies' earnings, both domestic and foreign, at 35%. We're only one of six developed nations in the world that does that, and we're still the highest. We're at 35%. That's pretty high. The worldwide standard is more of a territorial tax. Moving to a territorial tax would put us to a neutral state, neutral tax state, which basically the policy of neutral tax says that a country's tax would influence economic decisions as little as possible. Right now, our taxes influence economic decisions greatly because it does not promote an environment for businesses to invest in our country. So, you know, you get companies like Pfizer who merging with AstraZeneca, and they might be moving to UK. That way they get the foreign benefit. And you get Walgreens, they might be moving to Switzerland with their merger. But if we were to go to a territorial tax, it would put us in a neutral state. And then businesses would look at the most advantageous thing without having to look at that tax benefit. So that's one of the things that we can do. And you know, you can look that information up because it's pretty detailed, but it's fairly simple stuff. I put a blog on my Facebook page about it earlier today.
Now, I know when we talked earlier in the week, you mentioned the Berry Amendment, and I was not familiar with it, but can you talk about that a little bit? Matter of fact, before you start that, before you go down that road, because that's going to take a few minutes, I've got to say this. The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas. And ConservativeNationMedia.com has our very own big and bright Texas star, Michael Berryman. We welcome Michael and his patriotic, no-nonsense brand of Americanism to Sunday afternoons. Michael is as involved in the Texas GOP and Tea Party politics as anyone, so you won't have to miss his take on Lone Star State conservative goings-on direct to you from Fort Worth. It's the Michael Berryman Show, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking with Jacob Brim. He is challenging Marsha Blackburn for the 7th District Congressional seat, and we were talking about the Berry Amendment. And back to you, Jacob.
All right, so the Berry Amendment, something not a lot of people know about, but it's tied to the DOD purchasing. So any company that is dealing with the DOD has to qualify under the Berry Amendment, minus one specific area, at least until recently. They just passed just a couple days ago for the athletic shoes. Athletic shoes used to not be covered under the Berry Amendment, but now they are. Basically, the Berry Amendment says that any product purchased by the DOD has to be 100% made in America. The standard for made in America is actually only 70%, but under the Berry Amendment, there are loopholes in that. One was the athletic shoe. The athletic shoe used to not be covered because they said that there's not enough American companies to manufacture that product at a cost that's reasonable. New Balance proved that they could do that, so now they are opening it up, but we still have a problem. There's only New Balance, Wolverine, which I do not think Wolverine makes an athletic shoe. I could be wrong with that. I know they do work boots. And then there's Altama Boots. Altama Boots actually used to be Brown Shoe Company. They could manufacture athletic shoes that would meet the standard. And that actually directly affects this district because Altama Boots is located right here in District 7 in Lexington, Tennessee. And since they are tied to the hip with DOD with a lot of their purchases, they did boots. Many people in your listening area military-wise probably wore Altama boots, know that they make a great product, and that's something that we could champion here. But there's actually another loophole that I would like to get closed, and that loophole says that if the company who has the contract no longer makes that product in the United States, they can continue to buy the product from that company outside of the United States. And what that does is that allows a company to slowly move outside the United States and still continue to get the product passed under the Berry Amendment.
Ah, okay. But do you think Marsha Blackburn doesn't know this, or what's the deal? What are your thoughts?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't know, just because I don't think that she pays close enough attention to it, which is sad because the military is right here. I don't want to go and bash her, but part of me thinks that she really doesn't care. I could be wrong with that, and that could be harsh, but that's just how I feel about it. If the military is in your district, you ought to be pretty knowledgeable about the stuff that relates directly to military companies, because if the military is in the district, then businesses that rely on the military are in your district. And you ought to know a little bit about that stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And, you know, there are fewer and fewer veterans in our Congress and in the Senate. And, you know, I think the more we have in there, the better off we are, at least in terms of military issues. And, you know, that's the other thing. There's been so many social experiments carried out on our military over the last several years, and I've never heard her take a stand on that. I've never heard her take a stand. You know, a few years ago, not even a few years ago, last year, they were, Michelle Bachmann, Louis Gohmert, and I think Stephen King were talking about the problem with the Muslim Brotherhood advising our president through the DHS. And, you know, I was hoping, since we're in here in a military town and we've, you know, the 101st has lost quite a few people in this fight. And I was hoping that that Marsha Blackburn would join the chorus on that. And I didn't hear anything. It was all crickets. So that's disappointing. And we have, of course, an MOA compound here in Dover in Stewart County, the Muslims of America, who were formed by Sheikh Gilani, who was a terrorist in Pakistan. And, you know, you would think that she would be more up on what's going on here, especially since so many. I mean, that's one of the things that really, really gets under my skin is I feel like every day is another day that the military is betrayed when we allow these kind of things to happen, when we have the enemy advising our president and we have representatives that don't say anything, and the ones that do say something are ostracized.
Well, the problem is the moment they take a stand against Obama, they're labeled as a racist. And I don't care if someone labels me as a racist, because I know that I'm not, and I'm willing to take a stand for our military and make a stand for what's right. Call me whatever you want. If it's right, I'm going to stand firm on it. I don't think that we have enough people willing to do that. We have a lot of followers up there who get comfortable, and they want to blend in with the crowd so they can stay. We don't have enough people willing to make some noise. I'm actually really happy to see old Gowdy out there making some noise and riling people up. I think it's a good thing. We need to have more of that. We need to have more people willing to stand up, stand firm, and say, this isn't right. We need to fix it. Because if we don't, we're part of the problem, and I'm not going to be part of the problem.
You know, there's a lot of federal overreach in a lot of areas. You know, in Tennessee, in Kentucky, a federal judge recently overruled the Kentucky State Constitution in reference to their Marriage Protection Act. And Tennessee's is written almost identically. And so it's a matter of time. Now, to some degree, that's a state issue, but at the same time, you know, Article 3, Section 2 allows, basically clearly states that the Congress has the right to restrict the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. Now, if you were the representative from the 7th District, would you be interested in restricting the right of the Supreme Court on appellate issues?
I'm a firm believer in states' rights. And I think that what we have to remember is that when the Declaration of Independence was signed, a state was placed on the same level as Great Britain. And the federal government is there for the general welfare and common good of the people. So I would support what the state's decision would be on pretty much everything. I don't really understand if I get your question all the way. Maybe I just don't understand it. I got the wonderful seasonal allergies killing me right now. So I really hate to make an answer on that question because I don't think I fully understood it.
Okay,
I'll
repeat it, and I understand this is probably the first time you've heard it, so you know it will be reasonable on this. But Article 3, Section 2 states, Article 3, Section 2 states in the Constitution that Congress can restrict the appellate jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. Now, most of the controversial decisions that have come down from the Supreme Court have been done under the appellate jurisdiction. The Supreme Court has primary jurisdiction when you have two states at each other for something, or in a dispute between diplomats, from other countries or whatever. Certain things fall automatically, but everything appellate, that's the power that the Congress can limit, restrict. And they did it as recently as the 1990s on some prison reform issues. They said, hey, basically Supreme Court, you're not going to have any say in this. And they can do that. They have done it. And there's so many things that could go back to the states if Congress did that on a more regular basis. So,
yeah, I know there's some issues where I definitely like to say that the
Congress needs to rein in the Supreme Court, because sometimes I don't think they make the right decisions on some issues. I really don't. I think that perhaps they've been there too long and they've gotten comfortable with their positions. Kind of feel a little bit too powerful. I think Congress ought to step in a little bit more often, as long as they feel it's actually for the best interest of the state.
Yeah. What are some other things that you would like to work on if you're elected? What are some of your other legislative goals?
My other legislative goals is to rein in some of the government overreach and some of the bullying that's been going on with the EPA. Especially, I mean, I recently read an article that a guy dug a pond on his property and he's facing thousands of dollars in fines because the EPA didn't want him to. Another thing is that up in the Bakan there was a train accident. Now they're restricting the oil up there and telling them to slow it down and putting regulations on them because they're saying it's more volatile. Now I understand, as it was explained to me recently, that the sulfur content can make something more volatile. But when the reports are saying that over 98% of all the trains are getting to their destination without a single issue, then I don't think it's so much a problem as it is, well, it's an accident. Accidents happen. I'd like to see the EPA reined in a bit, because they're causing gas prices to go up when they don't allow United States oil to be refined in United States refineries. They said it was more volatile than Saudi Arabian oil. To me, that just says that someone up there probably has a foot in some Saudi Arabian oil.
Probably, yeah.
Another area that I'd like to see done in is the BLM. I mean, everyone is aware of the situation recently with BLM. If they would have took half them assets and put it on the border, we'd be a little bit better off. I think it's funny how they were able to wrangle up so much money, so much money and so many people over a tortoise, but they couldn't do it over a border. Just goes to show that their priorities are not in line with the wants of the American people.
Yeah, they can secure the Bundy Ranch, but they can't secure the border.
Yeah. And they can't even give us a good reason for why they were doing the Bundy Ranch. I mean, that dispute was going on for decades, apparently. They just now decided to do something about it? No. That's not right. And another area is the ATF. The ATF probably going to knock on my door later now. They're raiding people that have restraining orders on them. They're putting businesses that manufacture firearms, they're putting them in fear. And to me, that's just insane. I mean, if they're manufacturing firearms and you gave them the permits to do it, but now you're demanding things from them, that's not right. That's encroaching on your rights. That's encroaching on business, and that's not good for business when we already have people who are struggling, business owners who are struggling. I think that's just another area where we need to rein them in.
Yeah. Now, obviously, as I said at the beginning, it's the odds are not in your favor, but I am glad you're in the race. I'm glad she's being challenged. I'm hoping people will start asking her some hard questions. So what do you have planned for the next year? I mean, you don't want to give away too many secrets here, but what's your strategy for trying to get the word out, and what do you have lined up as far as big events?
Well, we don't have the millions of dollars set up for campaigning. We are really grassroots, and I know that term gets thrown around, but what I mean by that is I'm out here like right now, sitting in my car. I'm out burning up the highway every day, going to businesses, knocking on doors. As far as events coming up, this Saturday down at Dover, I believe that's your neck of the woods, we got the Eagle Fest.
Yep.
I'm going to show up to that, get to talk to some good people. We got that Cumberland 4th of July party I was made aware of. I'll be showing up to that. Going to try to get some stuff going on there. And anywhere else I really get an invitation to, unless there is no physical way for me to be there, I'm there. So if anybody out in your listening area has an event, I will be grateful, because this is an election that I'm running. I'm running for this election, but it's really not about me. It's about the people. People's voice finally being heard. So if Marcia wants to keep her job, she's going to have to fight for it, because she's not going to get to sit up there all cozy anymore. She's going to know that the people want to be represented. It's not about party politics, special interest groups, and wealthy investors. It's about giving the people the voice in Washington that they deserve. So I'm running for your voice. I'm running to get out there. And everywhere that I can possibly go, I'm going to be.
What kind of response have you gotten so far?
Everywhere we've gone, we've got a great response. I can honestly say, and I'm so thankful for this, that I've yet to get a bad response from anywhere I've ever been. Everybody's been wonderful. I've met many great people. The local Republican groups have been wonderful. The Tea Party guys have been great. The people I meet on the streets, the independents, they've been great. I know some Democrats that are in my corner, which I think is awesome. So overall, we've had a really good response, and I think that's a blessing.
Yeah. Well, and now, when did you actually kick off your campaign?
We actually kicked off the campaign. It's actually kind of hard to say. When we got the petition back before April 4th, you know, we were going around talking with people locally. So locally they knew that I was going. But honest to God, hardcore kickoff, I guess, would probably have happened April 5th, because that's when I started getting on the road locally and with the Chester County Republican Party meeting. So that would probably have been the kickoff. But my name will be in the Leaf Chronicle soon. They gave me some time, which I think is wonderful.
Right. Now, you were at an event earlier tonight with the Republican Party there, right?
Yeah, the young Republicans here in Montgomery County, wonderful people, really nice, asked some really good questions. Really happy to know that they had someone out there who was wanting to represent them, I think. Great response from them. So I had a good time. I really did. I actually spent a little bit longer there than I thought I was going to. So it was nice.
Do you think, now I don't know, I guess Marcia's been up there a few terms now. Do you think she'd be surprised at how many people are disappointed in her from things
I
you've
think
heard?
She
I
would
mean,
be.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think she'd be surprised with the, not only the amount of people, but who it is that's disappointed with her. And I know we live in a place where, in a time where a lot of people are really nice and they say a lot of nice things. But I've met mayors, and I don't want to give out too many names, but, you know, I've met mayors that are upset with her. I think she'd really be shocked with the amount of voters in her district that are not only upset with her, but very happy that there is someone running who cares about
right.
them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think,
well, I think
it's
that
be
happens
a
lot of
for.
Yeah. Well, I know I'll definitely have you back on. Definitely interested in having you back on if you're interested in coming on. And I'll see you this Saturday. And, you know, we'll do what we can to spread the word. I'm not saying I'm endorsing you, but I'm certainly endorsing you giving her a run for her money and, you know, giving the people an option. That's about all
awesome.
The time we got, and I appreciate you coming on, and we'll definitely talk again. Like I say, I'll see you Saturday. Thank you for throwing your hat in the ring, and God bless you, and have a good night.
Hey, thank you very much.
Join us next week on Inside Tennessee, same time, same place, 7 to 9 p.m. Central on Tuesday night. Take care. Have a good week.